The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
I'm Seth Leibson, and today, once again, for Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. The Supreme Court hears a key free speech case, and Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson just gets our First Amendment wrong.
So my biggest concern is that your view has the First Amendment hamstringing the government.
It really is concerning.
She's got it upside down. The question was astonishing.
The House and the Senate try to force China to sell TikTok.
Is a giant counterintelligence operation here in the United States.
Congressman Mike Gallagher, the chair of the China Select Committee, weighs in.
This is a basic test of how resilient our republic is from our communist adversary.
Former President Trump joins us, addressing his opponent, Joe Biden.
He's the worst president in history. There has never been worse.
We've got all this and more. I'm Seth Leibson, coming to you from Phoenix and AM 960 The Patriot, where I host a program in the afternoon, Monday through Friday. Learn more and listen to my program at 960thepatriot.com. And take a moment to follow me on X at Seth Leibson. That's Seth, L-E-I-B-S-O-H-N. And follow this program as well at Town Hall Review. Town Hall Review is part of the Salem Podcast Network. We're going to start in D.C. and the Supreme Court. On Monday this week, the court heard arguments in the case of Murthy v. Missouri. It's a First Amendment case to watch as it deals with the unprecedented stifling of speech we saw through the COVID pandemic. Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson got the First Amendment wrong.
So my biggest concern is that your view has the First Amendment hamstringing the government in significant ways in the most important time periods. What would you have the government do? I've heard you say a couple times that the government can post its own speech, but in my hypothetical, kids, this is not safe, don't do it, is not going to get it done. And so I guess some might say that the government actually has a duty to take steps to protect the citizens of this country, and you seem to be suggesting that that duty cannot manifest itself in the government encouraging or even pressuring platforms to take down harmful information.
Peter Kersenow of the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights responds in his conversation with Bob France on AM 1420, The Answer, in Cleveland.
So, Peter, whoa. Supreme Court Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, whom I would remind everybody, did not know what a woman was during her confirmation hearings because she's not a biologist. Yeah. She's concerned that the First Amendment is hamstringing the government. Whoa. I could go on and on, but your woe tells me you're ready to go. Go.
I don't even know where to begin, Bob. But look, maybe she should have tried to be a biologist because the law is not her specialty. This is incredible. That was an embarrassing display. I don't even know where to begin. The fact of the matter is the First Amendment exists not to restrict the speech of American citizens, but to make sure the government doesn't restrict speech. It is there to protect us against the government.
In other words, what she said she fears is what's supposed to happen, that the government is being hamstrung.
Exactly.
The government's supposed to be hamstrung.
Exactly. She's got it upside down. The question was astonishing. Look, in the United States of America, there are very, very, very narrow exceptions to the unfettered right to free speech. And those have to do, all you got to do is look at Brandenburg versus Ohio, basically. Brandenburg versus Ohio is the seminal Supreme Court case related to what kind of restriction, if any, may be permissible. And it is extremely narrow, Bob. I don't know it off the top of my head, but it's only if there's direct, imminent, lawless action that is being advocated, okay? Imminent lawless action. When you're saying something such as you have a Klan rally next to an all-black school and you're exhorting them to go into the school to hurt people, that kind of stuff is not protected. But that is, when does that happen? You know, and then the old saw about yelling fire in a crowded theater. I mean, the narrow exceptions are extraordinarily narrow. The presumption is in favor of more speech. That's how we approach things in America. If you don't like what somebody is saying, you don't stop them from saying it. You then promote more speech to counter it. And then the objective observer can decide which way he wants to act upon the competing values.
Peter, before you continue, let me give you quick context for her quote-unquote hypothetical. She suggested that if there was a dangerous trend being circulated online on social media in which children were being encouraged to jump out of windows at increasing elevations, should the government authorities not encourage or coerce the social media platforms to take down those encouragements in the name of public safety of those kids? That was her hypothetical.
KBJ must have missed the fact that in the United States of America, there's this phenomenon known as parents. That's the job of parents.
That's exactly what I said an hour ago on this program.
And maybe there are some other, you know, church, whatever it may be. There are private entities that do this kind of stuff. That's the job of parents. Unfortunately, under the progressive vision, parents are irrelevant. They may become completely irrelevant because, as you've seen, many of the top progressives out there say that kids belong to the state or should belong to the state. But bottom line here is the government has no business. Oh, look, government can speak all they want to. They can go out there and say, don't do this. Don't jump out of windows. In other words, the remedy for speech you don't like is more speech, is speech that clarifies, speech that counters. And the government can do that if it wishes to do, almost without restraint. And there are certain occasions in which it is restrained. But what it can't do is then restrain your speech. That's the problem with KBJ's approach. That is, I wish I could have seen John Roberts' face or Scalia's face or Thomas, almost anybody's face when she said that. They probably were resisting the urge to bury their face in their hands. That was stunning. That's stunning.
While voices like Justice Jackson defend the right of our government to throttle speech of average Americans in our country, there are a chorus of voices defending China's right to own an incredibly influential media outlet. Of course, I'm referring to TikTok and the parent company ByteDance. We'll turn first to my friend Brandon Weikert, author of, among other books, Biohacked, China's Race to Control Life. Brandon was a guest on my program.
It seems like a slam dunk common sense idea, end this thing. And people seem to be wanting to look for some libertarian reason that it gives too much power to the president. I read the whole bill. Peggy Noonan may have had it right. She said, okay, so on an 8-foot stick, this gets you 2 feet. But how about 2 being better than 0? I don't know. What do you think?
Right. Well, you know, that's why I've always said libertarians are the single greatest threat to the United States, probably ever, because whenever it comes down to actually getting things done, particularly for the right, enter the libertarians to suddenly side with the left.
Right.
They are not libertarians. They're usually libertines anyway.
Right.
But I digress. My point with this is the Chinese have been doing this sort of thing to American and Western companies that operate in China with wanton abandon. And frankly, on a very basic level, it's just nice to do it to them once in a while. And so on that level alone, we should absolutely do it. Who cares about the libertarian argument? They don't matter anyway. What elections have libertarians won ever? They don't. They're like parasites. They latch on to a bigger cause, and they use that to elevate their people in. And what do we have to show for it? 50 years of China growing, the destruction of the American middle class, the destruction of America's industry. The libertarians
rampant
do not have a great
illegal immigration.
That's right. Giving cause to our leftist enemies, giving them aid and comfort.
Letting criminals out early, not prosecuting, getting rid of cash.
Like I said, they're not libertarians, they're libertines.
Yeah.
And they cannot be trusted. And so they should basically, everything they're saying right now should be discarded. And beyond that, we know for a fact that TikTok, and I'll tell you what Oracle has said. Oracle engineers have set off the record. Because, you know, they're reviewing the algorithm for TikTok. That's part of this deal that ByteDance, the parent company of TikTok, had in order to continue doing business in the United States. They had to basically let a U.S. firm, in this case Oracle, review all their source code for the last year or so. And what multiple Oracle engineers have said is that they believe the TikTok, as it is run by ByteDance, is a giant, quote, counterintelligence operation here in the United States.
Wisconsin Representative Mike Gallagher is also chairman of the enormously important China Select Committee. He joined Hugh Hewitt.
You know, Congressman Gallagher, if we can't do this, I don't know what we can do about the CCP. In other words, this one is so obvious. This is such an easy win. This is such a pinata because TikTok has been TikTok for a long time. It is destructive of people's lives. It is a suck on your data. I won't go near it. I don't even like to have my phone near a phone with TikTok on it. But if we can't do this, what else do you think we can do vis-a-vis the CCP?
This is a basic test of how resilient our republic is from our communist adversary. To your point, Hugh, I mean, a Chinese company couldn't buy your radio station. They couldn't buy Fox News. We have well-established precedent regarding foreign adversary ownership when it comes to traditional media. And given the fact that TikTok is increasingly the go-to news source for Americans under the age of 30, the same precedent should apply in this case. And as for any concerns about the First Amendment or free speech, you are a vaunted constitutional lawyer, Hugh. You can push back if I'm wrong, but this bill doesn't say anything with respect to content or speech. We're talking about foreign adversary ownership of a social media application. And if the ownership changes, people can continue to post whatever they want on social media. Now, then we'll have a separate debate, which is a debate that all parents should have about social media in general, whether it's an American-owned company or a Chinese-owned company, and the correlation between social media use and anxiety, depression, and suicide. But that is not what this bill addresses. This bill addresses the fact that our foremost adversary now has control over what is the dominant news platform for Americans under the age of 30. That is crazy to allow that to continue. And if we allow it to continue, that's national self-suicide and basically us surrendering in the early stages of the new Cold War.
Chairman Gallagher, I don't know if you've seen John Haidt's new book, The Anxious Generation, which I've been reading this week. I brought it back on the plane with me. John Haidt is a man of the left. He writes for The Atlantic. He's an extraordinary scholar, though. And what we have done or not done for Americans under the age of 30 is basically abandon the field of their attention span and their content delivery mechanism to a market about which older Americans like me, boomers, and even middle-aged Americans like you, and that's what you are now, you have no idea what's going on in the lives of young people. And TikTok is what's going on in the lives of young people, and it's a disaster.
Well, I think Jonathan Haidt has written the best book of the last 10 years in his previous book, The Coddling of the American Mind. He's at the leading edge of the research surrounding the corrosive impact of social media use and its strong correlation with anxiety, depression, and suicide. And the other thing we've done is bubble wrapped our kids and allowed them less time to do free play outside. And Jonathan Haidt has talked about that. Notably, in his interview this week on Joe Rogan's podcast, Jonathan Haidt endorsed our TikTok effort and talks about how TikTok is unusually malicious in terms of how addictive the algorithm is, as well as the national security concerns surrounding Chinese ownership.
Coming up.
He's the worst president in history. There has never been worse. Our country is in trouble and our democracy is in trouble because of him.
President Trump, when the Town Hall Review returns in a moment. Stay with us.
This is Dennis Prager, and now a truly exciting new benefit. My monthly online video get-together for Pragertopia Plus members only. For an hour each month, get an exclusive chance to ask me anything. I'll be answering your questions. I've never done this. Submit your questions for me at Pragertopia.com. This is our chance to connect like never before. Go to Pragertopia.com or click the banner at DennisPrager.com.
Welcome back to Town Hall Review. I'm Seth Leibson. In 32 short weeks, our nation will select a president, and it really is hard to overstate how high the stakes are. We have the looming threat from China that we just looked at. We have an open border, inflation, unprecedented deaths from drug poisonings, and I could go on. But I'll let Sebastian Gorka pick up on the concerns in our very dangerous world in his conversation with the GOP nominee for President of the United States, Donald Trump.
It's not just Ukraine, however, Mr. President. We now have a war in the Middle East. For 4 years, there was no war under your tenure as commander-in-chief. You have proven yourself to be the most pro-Israel, most philo-Semitic president since the rebirth of Israel in 1948. You moved the embassy. You recognized Jerusalem. It's one of my great regrets that I was invited to the reopening of the new embassy that Ambassador Friedman created in Jerusalem. I couldn't go. Could you explain why is it seemingly that this administration, including Chuck Schumer in the Senate, so hate the man that Israel chose as their prime minister? Why do the Democrats hate Bibi Netanyahu?
I actually think they hate Israel.
Yes.
I don't think they hate him. I think they hate Israel. And the Democrat Party hates Israel. And the Democrat Party, if you remember, when many Israeli representatives, including Netanyahu, when they came to the country trying, begging, at that time President Obama, please don't make the Iran nuclear deal, which is a disaster and was a disaster. And I ended it. But unfortunately, they didn't do anything with the ending of it. I ended it and would have had a new deal made with Iran. It would have been good for everybody, and there would have been no nuclear weapons. You know, they're very close to getting a nuclear weapon right now.
Yes.
And once they have that, it becomes a different form of negotiation, a much more difficult negotiation. But I really believe they hate Israel, and they also see a lot of votes. Don't forget, when you see those Palestinian marches, even I'm amazed at how many people are in those marches. And guys like Schumer see that. And to him, it's votes. I think it's votes more than anything else, because he was always pro-Israel. He's very anti-Israel. Now, any Jewish person that votes for Democrats hates their religion. They hate everything about Israel, and they should be ashamed of themselves, because Israel would be destroyed. With me, Iran was broke. They were absolutely stone-cold broke. There was no terrorism because they didn't have money to fund Hamas and Hezbollah and the other 28 groups. China couldn't buy oil from them. None of the countries were buying oil for them at my order. They didn't buy it. I said, you buy it, you're not going to do business with the United States of America. They said, we'll pass, and they didn't buy oil. Now they have $221 billion, including the $6 billion that we gave them for hostages.
Yeah.
Okay, we
yeah.
have $6 billion, including the $10 billion that we gave them so that Iraq could get electricity. How about that? We gave them $10 billion so Iraq gets electricity, and Iraq wants to throw us out. The whole thing is crazy. These people are the worst. There's something wrong with them. They are the worst negotiators. All they're good at is evil. They're evil people.
Yeah.
They're sick. They're evil. They weaponized the Justice Department to get Trump. But Russia and all these other countries can do whatever they want to the United States. China is like, we're like a puppet for China now. He doesn't do anything with China because they gave him so much money. He's a Manchurian candidate. Look, he's the worst president in the history of our country by 10 times. There's never been anything like it. Jimmy Carter is the only one happy because he's a brilliant president compared to Biden.
Do you think that it's actually because they're compromised, the likes of Schiff that you mentioned, Biden? Do you think the Chinese have something on them?
I think they have them on Biden, yeah. I think they have it on Biden. Probably have it on Schiff, too. But I think they have something on Biden. I think there's no reason that Biden could be so weak with China. There's no reason. It's pathetic. And frankly, until they did I would never speak in such harsh tones about the presidency because I have such respect for it. But when they indicted me on all of this nonsense, including local stuff, everything, you know, you saw where Fani or the boyfriend or both went to the Justice Department and the White House, had long meetings, 8-hour meetings, numerous days. This was all planned. This was all done by the White House. And when they did that, I say, well, now I can just talk freely in the way I want to talk. He's the worst president in history. There has never been worse. Our country is in trouble, and our democracy is in trouble because of him for a number of reasons, including the fact that he's incompetent. But for a number of reasons, our democracy is in tremendous trouble because of Joe Biden.
Well, let's talk
about weaponized the Justice Department against his political opponent, something that was unthought of for our country. Very, very commonly used in third world countries, by the way.
It's police state tactics. It's police country. State tactics. That's why, the FBI now stands for Fascist Bureau of Intimidation, truly. Let's talk about our side for a moment. The last time we met in person at Mar-a-Lago, I asked you about Rona Romney McDaniel, and you swore me to secrecy. You said, we're getting rid of her. Finally, Lara has taken over. I'm very excited that the person I mentioned to you, Scott Pressler, has been hired by Lara and the RNC. But I have to ask you, are we there, Mr. President? Have we arrived? Is the Republican Party now MAGA? Is it America First? Finally, or is it still full of rhinos?
95% MAGA, and you know when I get a kick out of it. You saw how quickly we disposed of my competition. That's because it's a MAGA party. It's Make America Great Again. We want our country to be great again. We're not a great country right now. We're left at all over the world. We owe $35 trillion. The whole thing is crazy. We are not. When I see us giving billions and billions of dollars to Taiwan and other countries. You know, Taiwan, don't forget, Taiwan stole our chip industry. We had 100% of the chip industry. Now they have 95% of the chip industry. They're a very wealthy country. And I'm all for Taiwan. I'm all for everybody. But why are we giving them $16 billion, okay? They should be giving us $16 right. billion. Why are we giving them $16 billion? I'm for Make America Great Again. It's very simple. Make America Great Again. And I'm not for handing out, parceling money. We had the greatest border, the strongest border in the history of our country. We had the greatest economy in the history of our country. We rebuilt the military. We had no wars other than I finished the ISIS war. We took over, as you know, better than anybody. You speak about it better than anybody. We took out 100% of the ISIS caliphate. I did it in 4 weeks instead of 5, 6, 7 years, which is what I was told it would take if we could do it at all. I did it in 4 weeks. We have a great military. And you don't have to worry about our military going woke. They're not going to go woke. But the top people would like it to. But they don't have the strength to make our military. Our military is not woke, and it's not going to be woke. But they would like to try, and they are trying. They had Milley and these guys. They are trying. Amazingly, they're trying to make our military weak.
Talking of your picks, I've been told who you are considering as vice president. I've been told I can't announce it until it's official. When are you thinking of making that announcement, sir?
No hurry, and there is no one person. I mean, I'll tell you, there are numerous people. But we have a lot of great people in the Republican Party. We have a lot of great people that nobody ever heard of in the Republican Party, you know, that are excellent senators that not a lot of people know. I think it's probably good to have somebody with some political experience because you learn a lot about a person that's not, you know, this politics is a cleansing action. You understand what I mean, Sebastian.
Yes.
It's a cleansing action.
For the complete conversation with President Trump, go to townhallreview.com. Coming up, Senator Schumer's unprecedented act.
The fourth major obstacle to peace is Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
When the Town Hall Review returns in a moment.
Hi, it's Mike Gallagher. I start every day by reading through the stories at Daybreak Insider. In just 10 minutes, I can zip through 10 stories that help me start my day and help shape where I go with the Mike Gallagher Show. Over 250,000 people get Daybreak Insider by email daily, and it's available to you at no cost. Go to daybreakinsider.com and simply plug in your email. That's daybreakinsider.com. In 5 minutes, you will be the most informed person in the office. That's daybreakinsider.com.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. I'm Seth Liebson. There are certain big events in history that have a twofold significance. On one hand, they have a shaping force on the course of events in and of themselves. And then, a related but different point, they serve to reveal how bad things have deteriorated right in front of us without many of us even recognizing it. I'd say that was true in the COVID pandemic. And I'd say that was true in Israel and the terror statelet in Gaza with events that began on October 7th. There are a host of things that are distressing. For Exhibit A, I'll point to the Senate Majority Leader, the New York Democrat Chuck Schumer, on the floor of our upper chamber last week.
The fourth major obstacle to peace is Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. And now, As a result of those inflamed tensions in both Israeli and Palestinian communities, people on all sides of this war are turning away from a two-state solution.
We're going to turn now to Dan Senor, host of the Call Me Back podcast, and a guest of Hugh Hewitt's.
Is President Biden, has Secretary Schumer thrown Israel under the bus?
I don't think from a pure policy standpoint, Hugh, and as you know, in our last episode, the one you're citing with Haviv Redegur, Haviv and I, who are very close personally and usually see events similarly. We typically, you know, share the same analysis. The first time we got into kind of a little bit of a respectful but heated disagreement, because we both have been of the view that what President Biden has done for Israel post October 7th was extremely important and supportive. And I think it's important just to rattle off a few of those things, right? One, he made a very powerful statement right after October 7th in support of Israel. He made it clear which side he was on a number of ways, not the least of which is he flew to Israel, sat with the war cabinet, you know, most powerful leader in the world, the man who leads the commander in chief of the most powerful military in the world, goes to Israel, deploys military assets to the Eastern Mediterranean, sending a signal to Hezbollah, gets munitions going to Israel on a pretty steady clip, which was impressive because of the dysfunction in Congress and the White House worked around it. And he gave Israel diplomatic cover at the UN, vetoing bad UN resolutions. He deserves credit for all those things. Haviv and I, in our podcast every week, had been basically saying that. Where I took issue with Haviv is he believed that if Biden at some point has to ding Israel rhetorically, not substantively, but ding them rhetorically, to pander to his base, as Haviv would say, if he's got to do some things to win Michigan at Israel's expense, we can handle it. And I was willing to not protest Haviv's take. I was sort of along for the ride. I saw what President Biden did at the State of the Union address and the criticisms, unprecedented for him or for any president for that matter, the criticisms he made against Israel were to me, over the top, to use his phrase, and unfair and very damaging. And then a couple of interviews that Vice President Harris did over the subsequent days, and even an interview the president did. And my argument to Haviv was, it is true that at a substantive level, the president has been doing the right thing on the policy front. But rhetoric has consequences. And when you unleash the kind of criticisms against Israel that Biden was doing, it provides jet fuel, rocket fuel, for Israel's critics, for Israel's opponents, to include the UN, to include many capitals throughout Europe, to include many countries in the broader Arab Muslim world, to include the media. And not that those they were holding back, but Biden validated their criticisms. And so if there is a pylon on Israel, President Biden added to it, contributed to it. He provided rocket fuel for it. And I thought it was outrageous.
It is outrageous. The hubristic moment of the millennium is when Chuck Schumer stands up in the well of the Senate and tells Bibi Netanyahu that he's the problem. I actually don't have a precedent for this in American history. I don't think we've ever, maybe the appeal to King George that was filed before the Declaration of Independence, but it just, the idea that our majority leader in the Senate would lecture a democratically elected leader of our ally who's been invaded, savaged, pilloried, and has hostages is astonishing. And the fact that the president didn't mention anti-Semitism in America and stated all of that. But I want to get to my bottom line and test it on you. This is a political calculation that they do have weakness on their left. I think you and Haviv and I agree on that. But I believe it's gone so far now that he is going to suffer loss of his Jewish American voters and his Friends of Allies voters. And I want people to know the numbers. In 2000, Al Gore got 79% of the Jewish American vote. In 2004, John Kerry got 76%. In 2008, President Obama got 78%. In 2012, that dropped to 69% for President Obama. It went back up for Hillary Clinton to 71% in 2016. And in 2020, Joe Biden only got 68% of the American Jewish vote in the general election. I think he is putting a lot of that 68% at risk, Dan. I really do, because American Jews are afraid right now They actually feel fear.
Coming up,
his policy in Gaza, his policy in taking on Hamas, is the policy of the war cabinet.
When the Town Hall Review returns in a moment.
John Solomon provides exclusive reporting and newsmaker interviews on John Solomon Reports on the Salem Podcast Network.
We broke this story because we got the documents early. They put out this new information, and it affirms our reporting that this Democrat donor gave about $5 million or more in assistance to Hunter Biden, basically paid off his bills.
Subscribe to John Solomon Reports today on Apple, Spotify, Google, Rumble, or at SalemPodcastNetwork.com.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review. I'm Seth Leibson, coming to you from AM 960 The Patriot in Phoenix. On November 4, 1979, a group of radical Islamists stormed the U.S. Embassy in Tehran and took 66 American hostages. Let me just remind you older folks and tell those of you who are younger, it was all over the news, every day. The Carter administration was communicating to the nation. The elite news outlets were covering the hostages with names and pictures and bios. I bring that up to point out Americans are being held hostage by Hamas today, right now, approaching 170 days in captivity. And why? Why don't we hear anything about them? Let's pick up on Hugh Hewitt's conversation with Dan Senor.
George W. Bush was at the Nixon Library in Yorba Linda. Israel is the most dangerous nation in the world today, according to W. And I believe Americans know that, and I believe they know that we've got Americans held hostage, and the president doesn't name them, and he doesn't name the Abbey Gate victims. He didn't name the three Jordanian soldiers who were killed over there. We're not stupid. We all see the world, and Iran is moving chess pieces around, and we don't know what's going on.
This point about hostages is interesting to me. So Bill McGurn with the Wall Street Journal, the columnist for the Wall Street Journal, wrote a very good column in which he said, why don't Americans know the names of the Americans, of their fellow citizens who are being held in tunnels under Gaza hostage? Why aren't they household names? And by the way, what happened at the State of the Union is the families of the American hostages were there in the chamber, but they were invited there not by the president. They were invited there by members of Congress. It was bipartisan. Some Republicans, some Democrats brought these Americans. And that forced the president's hand. I'm not sure President Biden would have, at least he didn't mention their names. At least he mentioned that there were Americans being held. I'm not sure he would have had the parents not been in the chamber. And the only reasons the parents were in the chamber was because members of Congress brought them there.
Let me play for you a cut from that State of the Union. Cut 17.
And Israel must do its part. Israel must allow more aid into Gaza to ensure humanitarian workers aren't caught in the crossfire. They're announcing they're going to have a crossing in northern Gaza. For the leadership of Israel, I say this. Humanitarian assistance cannot be a secondary consideration.
Stop.
Or a bargaining chip.
Dan Senor, that is an insult. Israel has never used humanitarian aid as leverage. And I can't believe that line got into the speech. I've known a lot of bad speechwriters. The presidential speech goes through about 50 pairs of hands. Everybody sees what's in it. Not a mistake.
I said to Habib, I've been involved with this process. The number of eyes on a presidential speech is, it's just staff, cabinet secretaries that work on the issues that are addressed in the speech draft. I mean, it's just endless the number of people see it. Errors are extremely rare in a State of the Union address, or at least factual errors. That was a glaring factual error.
That Chuck Schumer was a flare. That was not an uncoordinated speech. Do you agree with me? The White House knew what Schumer was going to do.
I believe the White House asked Schumer to do.
Right. Okay. We do agree.
I don't think Chuck Schumer came up with this on his own. I think it was completely coordinated and requested by the administration. We can talk a lot about that. I have a lot of thoughts on what Schumer did. I thought what Schumer did was really damaging.
Yeah.
Fortunately, he's now backtracking.
Well, he'd better, or he's going to lose New York. I mean, there's one way for Chuck Schumer to lose New York, and it's to lose his Jewish supporters, and there are a lot of them. And I'm so stunned by that speech.
What is your red line with Prime Minister Netanyahu? Do you have a red line? For instance, would invasion of Rafah, which you have urged him not to do, would that be a red line?
It is a red line, but I'm never going to leave Israel. The defense of Israel is still critical. So there's no red line. I'm going to cut off all weapons so they don't have the Iron Dome to protect them. They don't have. But there's red lines that if it crosses, and they can, you cannot have 30,000 more Palestinians dead as a consequence of going after. There's other ways to deal, to get to deal with the with the trauma caused by Hamas. And it's like, look, the first time I went over, I sat with them and I sat with a war captain. I said, look, don't make the mistake America made. America made a mistake. We went after bin Laden until we got him. But we shouldn't have gone into Ukraine. I mean, we shouldn't have gone into the whole thing in Iraq and Afghanistan. It wasn't necessary.
Dan, we have never imposed a red line on an ally, much less an ally that is fighting a war of survival. Not an existential war anymore, but the existential war is coming with Hezbollah. What do you make of this, and why would Chuck Schumer agree to do what he did as their cat's paw?
There's so much to unpack there. First of all, I don't even know what he was talking about, a red line. Like, he didn't even talk about what exactly the red line is, going into Rafah or going into Rafah in a way that the administration doesn't want Israel to go into Rafah. What is it? What is the consequence of the red line? I mean, it was so garbled. I honestly don't even know what he was talking about. A. B. Soon before Israel launched its ground invasion, senior military officers from the U.S. were asked by the administration to go brief the Israeli War Council and warn them, based on the U.S. experience in Iraq and Afghanistan, how difficult counterinsurgency fighting is, and let them know you're going to have a lot of casualties. Is it really worth it? A version of what he was saying right there. And from what I understand, the estimates that were provided to Israel would have resulted in 10 times the casualties that Israel has experienced in Gaza so far. Now, it's not to say that the casualties in Gaza are awful. Every one of those lives are heroes, and it's a tragedy. But I got to tell you, Hugh, the numbers are a lot lower. And obviously these things can change, so I don't want to sound too overconfident or cavalier about this, but the numbers are a lot lower than the U.S. had forecast. Like I said, 10% of what the U.S. said the casualties will be. So I don't even know what – so he's wrong about comparing the Israeli experience to the U.S. experience in Iraq and Afghanistan. And we can have a whole separate debate about whether he was right about Iraq or at least about Afghanistan. As for Chuck Schumer, I thought what Schumer said – I'm perplexed by it. I rarely hear Chuck Schumer weigh in on a foreign policy matter. I rarely hear him call. I don't think I've ever heard him, and I'm happy to be corrected. I've never heard him call for a change of government in any country.
I don't think so.
Even if he has such a problem with the policy and not Netanyahu. Because keep in mind, Netanyahu is an unpopular leader today in Israeli politics, but his policies aren't. His policy in Gaza, his policy in taking on Hamas, is the policy of the war cabinet. So what's Schumer complaining about? Schumer says Netanyahu's the problem? Sounds like they have a problem with the policy, not with Netanyahu, but they don't want to say that.
Coming up.
Two things can be true. They're worried about losing 2024, and the campaign is run by stupid people.
A couple more minutes of Hugh's conversation with Dan Senor in the final segment of Town Hall Review. Stay with us.
Charlie Kirk here. It is critical we keep AM radio in all cars and all trucks. More than 80 million Americans depend on AM radio for news, weather, and opinions. AM is also the backbone of the emergency alert system, keeping you advised of threatening weather conditions and amber alerts. Text AM to number 52886. Tell Congress that we need AM radio in our cars. Again, text AM to the number 52886. Standard message and data rates may apply. Our love was lost.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review. I don't need to remind you that we are in the midst of an election cycle, but as we look at how our current administration has treated our embattled ally in the Middle East, it is worrying to think that this could all, really, be chalked up to raw political pandering. Let's return for a few minutes of Hugh Hewitt with Dan Senor, host of the Call Me Back podcast.
They are engaged in campaign 2024. They are worried about a few percentages of votes in seven swing states. But two things can be true. They're worried about losing 2024, and the campaign is run by stupid people. Because we sometimes think that campaign people are wizards, and sometimes they turn out not to be wizards. They turn out to be people can botch a campaign. They're botching this campaign, Dan. And I want to ask you, do you think the American Jewish community and its friends, like Irish Catholic Zionists like me, which is a funny way to say it, but it's true, should we all go back to the mall to remind them that 300,000 people can show up on 3 days' notice?
Look, I don't quite understand the campaign strategy, the Biden campaign strategy, because they are so, I think, overly concerned about this progressive base, this pandering base, this uncommitted vote that showed, quote unquote, showed up in Michigan for the primary, which I think they're overreacting to, because A, as a percentage of the Democratic vote that turned out in Michigan, it was about the same as the non-committed, quote unquote, non-committed vote that showed up for President Obama. So it wasn't way off.
It was worse in Minnesota and Washington State. It was 20% in Minnesota and 20% in Washington State did not vote for Biden.
But either way, Hugh, these are protest votes without consequence.
Agree.
So it's easy if someone wants to register a statement and say, all right, I'm going to make a statement. I want to send a message that I don't like President Biden's policy on Israel and Hamas. So I'm going to vote non-committal. Fine. Go ahead. Do it. But in November, they're not going to do that. Do you know why? Because they think, well, if I do it then, I get Donald Trump as president.
Yeah.
In other words, a protest vote in November has consequences.
It's hard to imagine. But there's a point where they're going to convert Democrats into Trump voters, Dan. And they're getting very close to that point. I didn't think it would be possible. I thought it would be a turnout election and that, you know, base against base 2004 all over again. But this is unprecedented. Did we drop supplies into Mosul? Did we ever think about the German innocence in March of 1945? Did we drop supplies into Tokyo after we burned it to the ground? We've never done this before. Hamas is an evil actor. They have to be defeated. And I believe in unconditional surrender when you've got evil actors who kill 1,200 people on a bright, sunny day at a music rave and an associated kibbutz. This is not someone with whom you negotiate. It's not Napoleon. It's not the Great League. It's evil.
Thanks for joining us for the Town Hall Review. There's more of this very important interview with Dan Senor. Get it at our site, townhallreview.com. And if you enjoyed this program and podcast, do us the favor of sharing it with a friend. Let me point out, you get Hugh's podcast and this program, Town Hall Review, and many more podcasts, all at SalemPodcastNetwork.com. Special thanks to executive producer Russell Shubin and producers David Pouchon, Alex Perez, David Dahl, and Jeremy Siegel. I'm Seth Leibson. Great to be with you. God bless.
Star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never before seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.